Knowledge is power, and there's a strong argument that an education system could be the backbone of a country. It could lead to our ultimate success or our ultimate downfall. In fact, one of the reasons America is such a great country to live in is because of the options our educational system has to offer. There are close to 20 million college students enrolled in public and private universities all around the country, pursuing all types of careers in the business field, medical field, engineering, liberal arts, and really any other type of occupation you could possibly think of. Add to that all the possible certifications one could possibly get to learn niche skills and start a side hustle, or just pursue a hobby they enjoy. I think it's safe to say that even though there will always be arguments to be made for one side or the other, we have it pretty good. However, what happens when a country isn't equipped with the necessary resources to provide its student a meaningful education? The result is that the country often faces economic issues, and that the student has the odds stacked against him or her in terms of pursuing their career and finding success because of issues that they can't control. The smallest act of kindness is worth more than the grandest intention. And luckily, we have a lot of caring, charitable individuals out there who are willing to sacrifice a bit of their extra time and a bit of their extra money sometimes, too, to serve the less fortunate. Welcome to Unmuted Generations, and in this week's episode, we'll be taking a deep dive into the importance of education and how my guests are giving back gracefully to students in Nepal and soon all over the world. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of Unmuted Generations. I'm Ryan Mio, and in each episode we actually focus on expanding our horizons and personal knowledge of the world through storytelling and sharing unique perspectives. My guests this week are Shansa and Stephanie from Building Education, a nonprofit organization focused on ending the cycle of poverty through the empowerment of education. How are you both doing today?
We're good, thanks for having us.
No, thanks for coming on. I really enjoy shooting these episodes highlighting a charity because it's for such a good cause. So thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on and chat. I was wondering before we start if you could introduce yourselves and your role within Building Education.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Stephanie Lim. I'm the secretary for purpose organization Building Education. We have been in operations for a couple years now, a few years, and our sole purpose is to provide education to third world countries.
Definitely. And Shansa, what's your role within the organization Building Education?
So I am one of the directors in Building Education. I try to work with like PR and marketing for like as much as I can, try to get some sponsors out there and reach out as much as I can. But I joined this past year. So I joined a couple months back, so I'm still, like, we're still, like, getting the hang of our roles and everything. This was our first charity gala.
Yeah, pardon me for interrupting, but I'm glad you mentioned that. First of all, big props to you guys for throwing it during COVID-19. Like, I could only imagine how hard it was to actually host a virtual charity gala this year, especially with all the circumstances going on. So props to you guys. And second of all, I commend you both. Like, you both are stepping out of the traditional 8-to-5 to really work on an initiative that's helping out people who may not be as fortunate and who really need the help right now. And that's really different from your typical side hustle, like let's be an entrepreneur type of gig. What really resonated with you about Building Education to join in the first place?
For me, it's funny that you mentioned like 8-to-5 and, you know, having a side hustle. So typically when people think of side hustles, they think, you know, running an independent business or a small business or something for profit, right? So my 8-to-5 is actually in nursing. I'm a manager in one of an inpatient rehab hospital here in LA. And for me, I've been doing this for a decade now. I'm almost in a autopilot mode. So I'm kind of, you know, I know I go into work. I know my role. I know my responsibilities. But something else was really missing for me. I'm active in another nonprofit, actually, for our professional nursing kind of on that side, but it just wasn't enough. And maybe it was the pandemic that kind of initiated this soul searching, if you will. But I started thinking about it. I'm like, I don't think I'm doing enough to help the world. And of course, at the start of the pandemic, so many lives were lost, so many and continue to be lost, and so many lives were affected, especially in like third world countries. And I thought, well, my life, my little bubble here in LA hasn't really been affected much, you know, but people in Nepal, people in the Philippines where I grew up, people's lives were just wrecked, you know, not just because of unemployment, but because they didn't really have much to start with. So I thought, well, how else can I contribute to reducing the impact of this pandemic on, you know, socioeconomic and just in general in the marginalized communities and stuff? So I actually found Wendy on a Facebook group of all places.
Yeah. And just for context, Wendy is the founder.
Yes, Wendy Hsu. I found her post, like her introduction post about like her life and how she grew up and stuff. And there was a little blurb in there that said building education helps to alleviate poverty. And that just quickly caught my attention. And I'm like, that intrigued me. I'm like, I wanted to learn more about what this building education was. So it led me to like research and look at the website and stuff. And ultimately, you know, that was the catalyst for me joining this, I call it a global movement, but yeah, that ended up, you know, me reaching out to Wendy and asking more about what the mission and vision of the organization is. And here I am on the board, and I just love what we support. I love what we're all about. And it's a really selfless organization. I think that's at the core of what we do, is that we just want to help people.
That's really cool. It's you always hear like one social media post could like change the world. And most of the time it's for the negative. It's all about like cyberbullying or something controversial gets posted. But it's cool how you were able to see a post and it just resonated and struck you, and you were able to get in contact with Wendy, and now you're a part of the team. I mean, that's so crazy. I totally agree with you too, how you call it a global movement. There's a big emphasis on education in the past, I would say, few years, ever since social media has become more prevalent and we've been able to see issues as opposed to just watching them on TV or visiting a website. We could see them on Facebook or Instagram or even LinkedIn nowadays. So I think there's a lot of other charitable communities that are kind of trying to help the less fortunate out, similar to you guys. Shansa, how did you get started with your journey?
So very similar to Stephanie, I have my 9-to-5. I work for a data company for the sales and marketing department. So essentially what my job is, just really vaguely, is assisting and sending out ads. And while I love my job, I love my company, it's not...
I work for an ad company too. And I totally understand what you mean because I'm in the data field. And I love my company too, but I know that there are a lot of data people out there that often try to get involved in other initiatives because sometimes the work could get too rudimentary.
Yeah, it's I don't want to say monotonous. It's different every day, but like the actual like gist of what you're doing, it's not very fulfilling. Like there's nothing, you know, like sending out ads. I'm not like, oh my God, I'm like helping the world at all. Like I'm not feeling Mother Teresa.
Well, it's a dollar revenue amount type of thing, you know. It's kind of like what Stephanie was saying. Like, the job is going to be interesting whether you're a nurse and you're helping like COVID patients out, or you're helping, you know, you're going to run into different things every day. But the sense of fulfillment, it's like another day at the job type of thing.
Yeah, like a nurse, I'm sure you get a little bit more fulfillment than we do. But so yeah, it was just getting to the point where I was like, I want to do something with my life that's, you know, a little bit more than setting ads to your Facebook page. And I've always felt that way. Like since I was young, I would volunteer for like different organizations. I'd never consistently, but just here or there where I could, I would try to help out. And when I moved to Hawaii, I think I was at the point where I was, and like COVID was happening, everything was happening, and I wanted to use my time to spend more time helping out where I could. So I joined Meals on Wheels initially, and it was cool, but at the same time, like, there wasn't a lot of, I wasn't able to meet with the seniors, you know, everything was distance. Like, I still didn't feel what I wanted to feel. And then same thing, I saw Wendy, the founder, on Instagram, and I clicked on her page, and I saw a post, and she was in Nepal doing, like, women empowerment work and building schools, and coincidentally, I was born in Nepal, and I had never, like, met someone that had a foundation in the country, let alone, like, knew the country. Most people, like, never even heard of it. So I messaged her, slid in her DMs, like a creep. Yeah, we met up, and it was awesome. And the organization, I loved what it stood for and everything that it's doing. Between the education for the children and the women's empowerment work, I think the two go hand in hand. And just joined on, and it's been great so far. And the people in the organization, everyone's like so selfless. That's another thing that keeps me going, is like the people are amazing.
Yeah, not only that, but you finally found the organization that like not only granted you the fulfillment you wanted, but you're helping out your home country. That's amazing in itself.
I was like, it's like too good to be a coincidence. So I had to join it.
Yeah, it's like a match made in heaven, so congrats to you. And thank you both for sharing that little tidbit of your journey. It's like always really interesting to see how people get involved in these organizations in the first place. So when you're working with individuals in Nepal, how is it? Because I know that they're facing a drastically different set of circumstances and obstacles than we are in the U.S.
When you're working with people, these people have drastically different lives than we do. So just naturally, you're going to see a different perspective. You're going to see, you know, the way that they live their lives and the struggles that they go through and the things that we don't have to go through. And for example, they don't have running water forget about hot water. That's a privilege. Yeah. Like, oh, running water. So like not having toilets every day, just that alone, you're so thankful. Not having a shower, not having hot water, like in the cold December months, you know?
That's a really good point. It makes me feel guilty sometimes when we go to like a hotel or something like that, mm-hmm. and they'll be like, oh, there's no water, just drink it out of the sink. And sometimes people think of it as like, oh, in America, like, oh, that's unhealthy water. Whereas like in Nepal, they actually don't have healthy water at all.
Yeah. Like they have to go, like they might have to go down like to somewhere in town to get water. And for like electricity, that's definitely not something that they have. So think internet access, they don't have that. Libraries, like for education, that's not really a concept in the rural areas either. You don't have Google to Google anything. Like you don't have access to the outside world, really. Telephones, you don't have that. Like
Well, they're also rebuilding right now too, because I did read that like in 2015 they had that really big earthquake, and according to like the United Nations right now, they were saying like 770,000 children still aren't enrolled in education. Like 11% of the buildings there that are used for education aren't outfitted to like handle any earthquakes. So it's like disaster after another disaster over there. Over there with the children, what's your company or what is like Building Education's like short-term mission over there?
So our short-term mission, and we have our three-year goal, actually, is to rebuild 100 schools. You're right. After the 2015 earthquake, I think it damaged almost like 10,000 schools and classrooms all across the country. And ever since, they haven't really recovered. I think they're about like 50% or so of those schools have been rebuilt. But there's still a big portion that has not been. So there's a significant percentage of students, especially in the rural areas and in the slum areas, that don't have access to safe educational facility. I mean, just last year there, I saw pictures myself. I didn't travel to Nepal because of COVID and everything, but I saw pictures of the original school that was just wrecked by the earthquake and just in disrepair. And I mean, it's unsafe. There's no roof. The roof is falling apart. The walls are falling apart. There's really no tables, no chairs. It's just a plank of wood that they use for a table. Kids sit on the floor, like the mud floor, the dirt floor. Yeah, so that's what we're trying to accomplish, is just rebuild as much as we can, so that, you know, the first thing we provide these kids is safety, like a safe place where they can actually learn.
Yeah, that's pretty scary if you see like the roof falling out of the school you have to stay in for 8 hours or so. Is that making a lot of children kind of decentivized to actually attend their education, since, you know, everything's kind of falling apart?
Yeah, so actually that is one of the reasons why parents pull out their kids from school. So first is that the distance. So in like the villages, there's usually not one school inside the village. Some of the kids have to travel, you know, walk far, a couple kilometers or more, to reach a public school, right? So that's one reason why we think that parents pull out kids. Second reason is probably for economic reasons, right? It's either they can't afford it, or they need their kids to help them with work. Yeah, but the safety thing is a big reason.
Got it. And I know you were kind of clarifying, Shanza, that they don't have a lot of like high internet speed at all over there. So it's not like online education is a thing.
Not at all. Like during these COVID times, it's not an option. And like Stephanie was saying, it's not safe. So these kids have to travel pretty far to get to their schools. It's not like one school per village. Like it's usually one per like a couple of miles. So some of these kids are walking. Like when I go back to Nepal, I go back every couple of years. We do hikes, and on our hikes, we're in the middle of nowhere. You see these little like 5-year-old school kids in their uniforms and everything, just like walking past us, going to school like it's their normal day. And like it's not safe for them to get there to begin with, and then once they get there, they have to deal with these terrible conditions. So the least we can do is start working on the schools that we already have, and then hopefully we can get to building more schools. And yeah, and then like Stephanie was saying, when they can't afford school to begin with as well, like they can't, that's a whole other issue. And I just want to say, like, when we used to live in Nepal, and when I do go back, we do have, so they're almost like maids, but they're children. So when I didn't understand it at first, because I was a kid, and I was 14, and there was a 12-year-old boy that worked for my grandparents, and he was essentially doing everything in the house like a maid. Like he would get you tea and everything, and clean the house, and like cook food, and like if you needed anything, you'd just ask him. I didn't understand. I was like, why is he doing all this? He's literally my age. And my parents explained that they're from the rural villages, so they can't really afford a good education. So in order for them to get that education, their parents send them out to like the city, like Kathmandu, and they work in exchange for school. So like their parents are essentially paying for him to go to school, and they'll help him with his homework and everything, and give him a place to stay. But in exchange, he has to do all this work. So imagine being 12 years old and having to work all day at someone's house as a maid, like cooking, cleaning, doing everything. And then school on top of that. And like as a 12-year-old, that's in like for us, like that's insane. Like you as a 12-year-old, we were playing like Nintendo 64, you know, like carefree after school. And then like having dinner, going to bed, like,
and that's really powerful. And I really appreciate Shanza for sharing that story, because I think that those kind of firsthand stories are very powerful, right? Like it, anytime I hear something like that, it just expands my perspective, and it makes me, it just helps me like strengthen and cement my belief in what we do, that we are really trying to make an impact in these kids' lives. And in a way, anytime I hear stories like that, it always like just enriches my outlook on life, right? It kind of just allows me to get out of my first world American bubble. and allow me to like really, really see what how other people are living, especially in, you know, the countries that we're trying to help. So thank you for that, Shanza.
Of course. Most of us are so fortunate. We really have our first world, quote unquote, problems.
Yeah, well, Ryan Seacrest, I think he used to have a segment on his radio show where he'd have callers call in and they would share like first world problems like, oh, you know, when I got in my car today, I spilled my coffee on the floor. My day's ruined. And it was a big joke, but it's one of those things where I think it's important for us to acknowledge that, like, although it's important that we do have problems in American society with our own education system and many other things, like, it's okay to worry about that, but also worry about like what else is going on outside the world. Because I mean, I can't even imagine being 12 years old and working for somebody that young. Like, obviously, like when I was 12, I would be like carrying the groceries and that'd be like my task for the day. You know,
yeah,
I can't imagine doing that 24/7.
And we're complaining about like the task, like that task for the day. And we're complaining about, you know, having to take out the garbage at night, God forbid. But these kids, like, they know the value of their education. It's not like they don't know. They know, and they're going to great lengths to get it. So trying to help out where we can.
Now, is homeschooling a thing there? Like, are the parents, are they on the same education level where they have, like, possibly bachelor's or master's degrees or anything like that? Or does how does the education system really work? Because I would think that if the parents do have an education, they would try to homeschool the kids or just bring them onto their own business and try to make a living that way.
So in the rural areas, the people are not very educated. So the parents are definitely not educated, and that's why they'll send their kids out to the more urban areas like Kathmandu and cities to send them to families where there are people that can school them. But mostly, so the way that it works is they pay for their education. So like my grandfather, for example, is paying for his education for him to go to this school, and then we'll help him like with like homework and things like that. But they're kind of paying for them to go to school, not necessarily getting homeschooled.
Yeah, and just to add to that, really, it's only been since the 1970s that the education system in Nepal really was developed. So it's most of these parents probably kind of did not experience that, or we're in the early stages of, you know, the big education revolution. But like Shanza said, I think education is more centered in the big cities, in the capital and stuff. But when you go into the villages, especially like, you know, when you get to the mountains and the hills and stuff, there's really no access. And it's not like the government, you know, builds a school in every village. You know, they have public schools in the nearest biggest town, I guess. But yeah, it's in those rural villages or the mountainous villages that there is a great need for educational support.
Yeah, that's another thing that I heard, that a lot of the education in Nepal is centralized. Like, they only have a few number of universities and it's all kind of in one central location.
Yeah. Which goes to one of like two universities.
That costs a lot of money, I could only assume.
Yeah.
Right. And actually, our school that we started on this year, construction, I believe, we're now in the process of starting construction and buying materials. But it's actually in the Chitwan district where the Chipang people live. So the Chipang people live in the hilly areas in central Nepal, and sociology research shows that they're one of the poorest people in Nepal, and really pretty much because they're so remote up in the hills that there's really no opportunities for them. So that's where our school is, in Saraichuli. So we are hoping to open that school or finish construction and outfitting the school, you know, getting all the resources like educational materials, books and stuff by early next year. So
that's quick. I'm glad that it's being built. I mean, it's going to have a big contribution to the Nepal society. And I also think it's crazy because I remember when I was in high school, we would have every semester like a 15-minute break to go pick up our textbooks, and everybody just used it as like a break and kind of slacked around. Nobody really cared for it. But it's crazy to think that individuals in Nepal don't even have the luxury to have textbooks or have this education system that we sometimes take for granted in the US. Are these individuals in Nepal pretty motivated to like pursue their education, and like what type of careers do they go into afterwards?
So our schools are mainly primary education, so like grade school, and we utilize the government's like basic education curriculum. Well, first off, we do sponsor college and university education. Actually, we have one college student, or university student, I should say, that we are sponsoring, and she's in pharmacy school. So if we kind of find people who are interested in furthering their education, that's definitely an option. Our goal is to, you know, help support them in their dream and reach their goals. That way, those university students would likely end up going back to their communities and helping out, right? So our university student, Rebecca, her goal is to, when she finishes pharmacy school, is to go back and actually help her village and be a leader, essentially, right? So it just kind of, it's a positive ripple effect. Yeah. That's what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, you're trying to get them out of like the circadian rhythm of things and just kind of like...
Yeah, and that's the, you know, that's why it's called cycle of poverty, right? So I grew up in the province in the Philippines. So I see this all the time where like kids who grow up in the slum areas or the farms and stuff, they just kind of follow what their parents do. So if their parents didn't really go to school and just work in the farm, then that's kind of, that's their whole world, and they don't see anything outside of that. So they're in their minds, they're almost like, okay, well, I'm gonna need to learn this. So they learn it at a young age, and they just become farmers, and then they kind of just cycle through that. Then their kids kind of just know that, you know, that kind of world. So we're trying to break that cycle by introducing education in there and actually empowering these people to realize that, wow, there's so much more to what I can do. Like, there's so much more out there, and really empowering them to make a difference in their own villages.
Shanza, I know you were talking about women's empowerment a little with building education, and since you actually lived over there, I'm kind of curious, like, who were your role models growing up in that society? And do you think role models play like a really big thing for the kids who are living there? Because, you know, I'm of the mindset where, you know, if I don't see anybody else succeed, you know, or getting an education, then it's going to be really tough for me personally to get to that next level of things.
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough where, well, my family was in a good situation. We're from Kathmandu, so we're from, like, the city area. So, luckily, my mother was educated. She had a bachelor's. My father was well, and then most of my aunts and uncles were. So, I was, like, I grew up in a pretty good situation where I had, like, those role models. And my mother went to school for botany, for example. And growing up, she pursued her master's with, like, two children. So, I would say they're my role models for sure. And my father, too, he pursued his master's when we were like 7 years old. So I always had good influences when it came to education. They always pushed education and the importance and, you know, go to school. They're still pushing me to go to school, actually. They're like, go back to school, get your master's, get your PhD, like do it, you know? So I was always around that. I think I was very fortunate with that. A lot of I think, like, people, the kids that we're helping, for sure, like, they see, like, the older generations being able to do that. So we have Rebecca, and I think the children definitely can look up to her. And if they see like us, like anyone like outside that can come in and like show them like, hey, there's other opportunities out there, like outside of what you're seeing on a daily basis, I think helps a lot, because we're fortunate to travel and like get out there and like see what else is out there and see, you know, different perspectives. But they can't do that, and they're, like Stephanie said, they're stuck in the cycle. So definitely if we can get out there and show them what else is out there and all the other opportunity, that's huge.
Yeah. And do these kids generally, do they plan to stay in Nepal? Like, let's say, for example, we're talking about one of the children who lives in like a more rural community. Mm-hmm. I think there could be an argument to be made that like, if he gets an education and he wants to go into pharmaceuticals, if he's living in the rural community, he may not be able to, you know, find work in that particular sector of the country. So would he move into somewhere more inland or the city or travel abroad? Like, what's the general dream of a child that lives there?
A lot of people they'll move to the city, but a lot of people do also travel abroad. People move to America because everyone knows America is a land of opportunity. But there is always a sense of, you know, you have your sense of like pride in your country. You have your sense of like, I was fortunate enough, so let me give back, hopefully. A lot of people will feel that. So I think that's our goal. And like with women's sustainability and trying to empowering women to do that as well. So it's about building leaders and hopefully teaching them the right morals as well along with that. And like, they're good people as well. So just, you know, hope that they'll be leaders in their communities giving back when they can.
Yeah, I know your team is mostly women with the exception of one guy there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that like empowering women is a really big thing in that society, since like the emphasis on education was really since like the 1970s. Like I'm assuming beforehand it was mainly just like the really rich, wealthy people who could actually get an education. Now it's kind of inclusive towards everybody. So what are you guys doing to help empower women in that aspect?
We have 12 women empowerment conferences planned for next year in across 3 districts in Nepal. And our goal is really to connect them with local entrepreneurs, local businesses, local leaders that can inspire them to do more with their lives, but also teach them certain skills. So we're injecting, you know, financial literacy in there. Most of them don't know basic budgeting or, you know, for their household and stuff. So basic financial literacy. We're also teaching them basic business skills and developing a business plan. So earlier this year, we had our first conference. I think there was 50 women in there that they learned how to develop a business plan, set up, you know, the businesses that they dreamed of and stuff, and really partnering with local NGOs as well to kind of get them the resources that they need. So that's our goal for 2021, is to expand that and do more of that so that we can reach more villages and more women, essentially.
That's cool. You're kind of like streamlining their education a bit with these conferences. Like I know in college, like if somebody takes a course and they want to know how to create a business plan, they have to learn about accounting, they have to learn about economics, and it's like, just get to the point, you know?
Yeah.
So
the organization hits the 2 points. So we do the infrastructure for sure to, you know, give them the schools, but then you also teach them, give them like leadership opportunities and teach them leadership skills so that they can come back and hopefully, you know, help their own communities.
Yeah, exactly. Reinvest and help out the less fortunate, since they're in a better position. Is it hard at all to communicate with somebody across the world and obviously kind of work with a diverse set of people? Because I have trouble, you know, if I'm just like trying to set up a call with my cousin who's on like the East Coast of the United States.
It's definitely a challenge, you know, communication challenge to reach out to, you know, people on the other side of the world. But I think working with the local, our local contacts, I think we've found a way to better communicate. Of course, there's email and Zoom and stuff. But yeah, there's definitely, it's definitely a challenge trying, you know, with the time difference and of course they're busy as well. But I think ultimately their goal, their vision is our vision, right? To help Nepalese people. So if our visions are aligned, I think people just find a way to, you know, get through those whatever technical challenges or communication challenges. So.
Yeah, I always have a high level of respect for people who not only work with other people across the world, but also are like doing it while working their own individual careers and their jobs and stuff. Like, I'm sure there's some sort of balance aspect that gets to it, and some endless nights where you're like working at your typical job and then you're trying to set up for the gala, for example, or a charity event.
Yeah, definitely. I know for me, this is like my another full-time job. So, but I think overall, I don't see it that way. That's the thing. So I have my 9-to-5 job at the hospital. I don't really see that as a job. I love what I do. I'm always, you know, every day I go to work, I always feel like this is my purpose. I need to be here in order to heal these people. But also on the building education side, you don't see it as another 8-hour or more job, right? So I see it as, well, this is my part in bettering the world. So it sounds exhausting to have 2 full-time jobs, but it's really not. And that's where the sense of fulfillment comes in, I think.
Yeah, I think it may sound like exhausting to others because it's not something like they typically enjoy. Like a lot of people, they want to get involved in community service, but I know there are some people where it's like, for example, like cleaning up a beach or something, like that's not necessarily their cup of tea. They don't want to spend like their Saturday clean and wake up really early to do something like that, even if they know it's for a good cause. So how do you often get people to be more involved in like your building education community, and like how did you guys get more involved in just like community outreach in general?
So that's good that you kind of said, you know, cleaning up the beach. Yes, it's volunteer work, but sometimes people think of it as another task or another thing on their schedule that they have to check off. I think the core of it, and you know, when we try to reach out to, you know, potential team members, I think the important thing is to really express and explain our why we do this, and what our why drives us to do the things that we do. And I think once you explain that to people, they'll understand a little bit more, or it attracts like-minded people. So that's kind of how our team was formed, right? So Wendy put out her why and her vision, and it attracted me. I know personally, I saw that as, well, that aligns with my why. Why don't I, you know, get in touch with this person and connect with this person? And then here I am, and I'm sure it's the same with Shanza. It resonated with her. So I think it all starts with our whys.
Yeah, I agree with that to some extent, but I also think that would you say that there are times where it's like, even though their whys may follow the same mission or ideal, that they may not have the time or the capacity to actually work on it? Because like, for example, like let's say it's like a parent and they have like 4 kids and they're just maintaining a job that they're working 10 hours a week and they want to get involved, but they just can't because they're like caring after their family. Are there other ways to do it instead of just like sacrificing your time?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that's why when we have, you know, potential team members or people, you know, showing interest in what we do, the first thing we do is really get to know them, right? And get to know, okay, what are your priorities in your life? How can building education fit in your priorities? And we kind of cater to that. So we don't expect everyone wanting to help, spending the amount of time that we do, right? We understand that this is what we signed up for and we're committed to. Let's say I have a friend who showed interest in helping. So we kind of just, you know, see what they can do. There's plenty of ways, whether it's helping promote our events, helping set up certain things, or helping us organize these events. There's various ways. So it doesn't have to be like a 8 hour, you know, per day commitment.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Like, I think some people sometimes they worry about it being such a big commitment. And I think it's for such a great cause. A lot of times people are looking for like that moment where it's like they're in the right psyche. Like they want to be in the right mindset going into something. And if they have to dedicate like X amount of time to help out others, well, they're like damn sure going to like dedicate 8 hours of like their full capacity instead of just kind of droning on about it.
Yeah, for sure. I think, well, the one thing that I believe strongly is you're never going to be ready. Like, there's never a time where you're going to be completely ready. Like, you just got to dive into it sometimes. And I think that's the case here is, you know, you're never going to be able to be like, oh, I have 8 hours every day set aside for this nonprofit organization. Let me join it now. It's about doing what you can. And we appreciate every little bit that you can do, whether it is like just promoting our events and promoting the organization, or if you have more time and you can, you know, send out some emails. Everyone has different roles. And everyone has their own lives aside from the organization. So we try to cater to everyone's, like, what everyone can do. And they're, like, we have members of our organization that go through different, you know, different times at work where they're busier or they have life events that go on and they might just, you know, hop off for a little bit and then come right back. So it's about everyone doing their part and doing what they can do. And we can't expect, you know, someone to dedicate their whole life to this.
Yeah, I always talk about on the podcast, like one of the true skills that I believe everybody should have is just kind of like rising to the moment. Like, sure, there are times where obviously you aren't going to feel like doing it or you're going to be a little busy. But like when you're put in that position, like make the most of everything count, because I think sometimes we tend to the American dream circulates too much around just like getting your job, putting money in your 401k, and like retiring in Hawaii, like where you are right now, Shanza. And that's very different than the dreams of like it's so funny that like in America, like our dream is like, you know, we want to start a family and then like hopefully make enough money to where we could eventually, you know, retire and be safe. Like, it's all based around safety, whereas like from other countries like Nepal, it's like their dream is to come to America and like change their lives for the better and make such a big impact on the world. It's such a change in just like cultures and the way they think. I think it's just really interesting from that aspect in terms of like you guys actually trying to build a community that'll foster that growth and hopefully allow them to move to different countries and stuff. Like, I wish there was like some statistic where you could actually see like the rate of people who actually like are able to travel outside and see more than just like their normal like circadian rhythm over there. In terms of like what's next for building education, I know you guys were talking about building 100 schools in the next 3 years and you guys are raising like a boatload of money in that aspect. What's next for you guys, like just in terms of like what are your strategies and what do you have going on behind the scenes?
Our short-term goal is to rebuild 100 schools in the next 3 years. You know, next year we have 3 more schools planned out to be built. In addition, we have the 12 women empowerment conferences, which I think we will continue to do because it does help women. By empowering women and providing them education, they do turn around and empower their communities and be leaders in their communities. So this is kind of our two-prong approach, right? So primary schools and also women empowerment and women education. We're definitely beefing up our marketing and networking strategies, of course, in order to be able to reach our goals and materialize them. We need financial resources. So that's definitely something that we are discussing how to scale and expand our marketing strategies. But yeah, we also need team members. Right now it's a 7-person team. We're definitely looking for more team members, whether you can commit, you know, an X amount of hours, or whether it's, you know, certain skills or services. So like a friend of mine, you know, who is a photographer and stuff, helped us out with our getting our message across through videos and photos and stuff. So it depends if your skills or your services, or if you could contribute time, all those are greatly appreciated.
Yeah, that's really sweet of your friend to shoot all those videos and everything. I mean, it's like, I think sometimes people come in with the idea like, I'm going to change this organization and make such a big impact. Like sometimes it's just doing one task here, one task there, and you're making more than enough of an impact.
Yeah, yeah. All those little tasks, you know, add up, and ultimately it's all in the name of the vision and moving that vision forward, right? So I think it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're editing a video for the gala or you're actually in Nepal volunteering, all that creates impact. So
yeah, honestly, everyone has their own skill set, and we could probably utilize everybody's skill set in some type of way. For example, for the gala, we had artists that were, you know, they had their paintings. We had people that had their own startups and had, you know, clothing lines, or were selling their own like bags and things like that. And we used that to raffle off or to auction off, and we were able to make some money that way. And just little things like that, like your skill of like painting, we were able to sell these paintings, and you know, your startup, we were able to raffle off some bags. And it was just like, you wouldn't think that you'd be able to help, but you'd be surprised what you can do and how you can help.
Yeah, and it's for such a good cause too. I could see so many different people getting involved. Like, it's not only is it's like a two-way benefit, because it's like, on top of them giving you stuff to raffle off, like, it's making them feel good because they know they're participating in a good cause. I think that's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Yeah, and a lot of people, these are just their hobbies. Like, it's not some, like, it's not their full time, but they're able to help out with doing the things that they love at the same time, and, you know, raise money for this organization, which is awesome. So if you have any questions, I'm sure you can help out in some way or another. Like, there's not a specific, you don't have to be sending out emails if that's not your forte, you know?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you both coming on and just chatting about, like, you know, building education and how you guys are really rebuilding the education system in Nepal. I think it's for such a great cause. And I think that sometimes we get so caught up in our own personal lives and our own professional career advancement that sometimes we don't always think about what's going on the outside, and how, sometimes if you aren't feeling like a full sense of fulfillment, even if you're at that peak career level, or even if you're at that peak personal level and everything's going well, that, you know, helping others could really help yourself in the long run. But anyways, thank you both so much for coming on. Like, I really appreciate your mission. I think this episode was like really informative for me and hopefully the general audience to know exactly what's going on in Nepal. And I'm going to put all of your links in the description below in case anybody wants to follow up with you or be a part of the Building Education mission, or even attend your next charity gala if that works with both of you.
Awesome.
Of course. Thank you so much both. For everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Unmuted Generations. If you guys enjoyed it, please make sure to leave a rating, review, or subscribe to the podcast. It really helps me. I appreciate the support as always. And I challenge you to ask yourself the question, how far are you willing to expand the horizons of your thinking and actively seek out discomfort to evolve and create a happy life for yourself? I'll see you guys in the next episode, and hope you have an awesome rest of your day.